stand there with a microphone on. All right. Thank you. I can't actually see the clock from where I am ever at all. And so I'm just... Oh, wait, no, it says 4:38.
Yeah.
Excellent. 38 minutes and 12 seconds after the hour of 4, apparently. In this, the month of March, in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. Live, baby, live. From the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios at Johnson 970, a proud part of the CBS radio family. This is the Rick Emerson Show. Thank you so much. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. A little bit of a fun fact. Now, this isn't actually applicable to anything yet. It wouldn't really be relevant till tomorrow, but I just can't wait. I can no longer contain myself. Horses cannot be held by me, I have to say it today. You know, originally, we were not supposed to go on the 13th. Originally, we were supposed to go on a week from tomorrow. We were supposed to go on the 15th. And I had to explain to everybody that going on the 15th was bad luck because it was the Ides of March. And then you just get blank stares from everybody because it's a town filled with people that went to public school. Anyway, it had nothing to do with nothing except to say that this is the 21st, and this is now our sixth day back. No.
Seventh.
I went to a private school. Sixth. Well, yesterday was the sixth. Seventh day. It's kind of the Iraq War. Third year, fourth year kind of a thing. Anyway, so it's our seventh day back. It's our, what is it, seventh show back. I had this whole thing I was going to do about it. It was our seventh and then a ten, and I've just completely...
Yeah, you're really working the numbers right now.
You shut your hole about what I'm working. Shut your sass hole right now. It's 503-733-2970. And take all of that out of post. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com.
Are you a little angry today?
I'm not a little angry. I'm absolutely fine. I'm feeling good about things.
Because you're running a little behind.
I am running a little behind. Let me just tell you this about that. I got here, I guess that 8 is the new 9. Because I don't know about y'all. Maybe it's just a CBS radio thing. Maybe it's like that, you know, you work at some companies and it's like the top, you know, the top 5% of people get raises and the bottom 5% of people get fired. Maybe at CBS it's just that the bottom 5% of the workers get killed every month or something. Maybe every fiscal quarter they just take the bottom 5% of the billing people out back and they just bury them in a shallow grave and cover their bodies with lime. And then their families wear ribbons of shame for the end of all time. I don't know. Because when I was a boy, when I was first, as they say, coming up in the game, business hours were 9 to 5. Sometimes 9 to 5:30 if you're a real go-getter. But it's like, so I'm thinking I'm going to be ahead of the game. I'm going to be on top of the ball. They're going to be impressed with how bright-eyed and bushy-tailed I am. So I start getting here at 8:30. I get here at 8:30, and I'm the last one here. Everybody's already been here for like 5 hours, working away. They're just slaving. So I started pushing it back. Today, I get here at 7:30. By the time 9 o'clock rolls around, I've done 3 meetings, I've gotten 15 emails answered, I've written 2 action memos, I've moved things to the top of my action item list, I've reprioritized my main corporate symbiosis action items, and yet I'm still behind. Everybody else has already done more than me.
What is an action item? Is there a mission statement relating to that?
There is. It has to do with the mission. It's right between mission statement and the team objective. So I went to bed at like 9:30. I got up at 6:30. I got here at 7:30. I'm already behind. And I'm not talking about with the show. I'm talking about all the other stuff waiting back at my desk. So I guess this is just, it's some sort of business phenomenon. It's like the gradual shrinking of candy bars over the year. You know? It is the gradual elongating of the work day.
Well, you're handling it well.
Thank you. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Coming up later on today, we have a penis watcher, as Mr. Garrison would say, a penis watch. Gary Baumgarten's going to be here from CNN Radio. We're going to be talking about... Look, I'm no Einstein or nothing, but we're going to be talking about this guy in New York who, if I read the story correctly, he's some sort of a Zen Buddhist. He's a monk or something. And then he had this brilliant idea that he would join the Marines and then was all astonished when they wanted to stick him in the hoosegow for refusing to go fight. So we'll talk about that later on. World's stupidest conscientious objective. Jim Roop's going to be here from Los Angeles in the 1 o'clock hour. I don't even know what has to do with the story, but it contains three fantastic words, which are politician, corrupt, and auction of personal goods. So we'll talk about that later on. We'll discuss this kid. We'll talk about this kid in Florida who I've apparently made the enemies list of. Some kid who's getting all up in my grill. If you've seen his profile, you know that's exactly the right, that's the lingo to use with the kids today.
Does he refer to you getting up in his grill?
He's some guy. We'll talk about MySpace later on, and I realize that this show has become one endless long diatribe and litany of discussions about MySpace, but it is apparently what's being discussed around the water cooler these days.
You can tell it's over because now all the old people know about it.
Because the 55-year-old guy in the comptroller's office is doing it.
I know. Once your mom has a MySpace.
Wide web. Yeah, seriously. Derek, can you help me get on the information superhighway?
It's too big now. It's too big. Yeah, my friend's parents on there. It's too much information.
But you know what it is? It's like they used to say there was some music radio. As soon as you're sick of it, that means people are really just starting to enjoy it. When I worked in music radio, we used to complain about songs constantly because then, as now, they would pick the same 12 songs and they would burn them over and over and over again. And it's like, how many times can you hear Fly Away by Lenny Kravitz before you want to cut your throat? And so we would complain to the program director about it. And I would say, God damn, do I have to hear this Lenny Kravitz song ever again? Can't you just please put a bullet in my brain? And they would roll out some memo from a consultant somewhere where the guy said that as soon as you were sick of it, as soon as the jock, as soon as the DJ on the air was sick to death of the song, that was exactly the moment at which the general public was really starting to get into it and they were starting to connect with the song. And so it's like when you would hear that Ira song by the Goo Goo Dolls. I mean, by the time you got sick of it, it's like the air staff didn't even hear it anymore. You get to a certain point in radio where the song plays, and if you're on the air as a jock, you don't even hear it. It's like living next to a waterfall. Eventually, the sound doesn't even register in your. You don't even know the song is playing. You just put that automation on auto-seg, and you leave the room to go smoke. We have some other things that I won't bother teasing now, because what's the point? Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely Sarah X. Dillon, who keeps things on track and keeps the show rolling. How are you?
I got my Verizon bill cut down.
So you're not going to pay $275?
Oh, they were trying to get me to pay, but thankfully I was looking over the counter at the paperwork she was going through and noticed that I didn't make a 275-minute phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Did they try to give you any sort of explication as
she
to
gave
what...
me, no, she was actually very short with me. I told her I heard there might be a bug in the system. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
There are no bugs.
Yeah, but would offer me no explanation for the 275 minutes that
Fantastic.
Were used. So regardless, I got it taken down to about $60, which is
so
what
it was
my
not your
to.
Kelly Clarkson ringtone.
It was not. I looked and it was only $1.99.
Yeah, good times. I don't know how. I don't know how artists make any money on that. It seems like at a certain point they're going to have to jack that up. Because I went to call Jen Lane again yesterday about something, and once again I heard that magnificent 7 ring. When you call, we should call her one day on the air. Mm-hmm. And you call it, and you just hear this. It's fantastic. And it's exactly the sort of thing I would pay to have on my phone. So I think they're missing out. I'm not trying to get them jack up their prices, but if I were them, I'd be charging like a 3 cents per ring kind of a thing. Because it's like text messaging. You know, text messaging is like 25 cents or 9 cents, depending on your plan or whatever. But it's like you never, know how much it is. And you don't even think about it. Because when they describe it, right, it sounds like so little. It'll be 7 cents. You're like, 7 cents? That's fantastic. And then you get the bill at the end. It's like $180 or something. And you have no idea how it is you racked it up. In the Johnson 970 newsroom, working on the following stories for your edification, is Tim Riley.
The president claims he never wanted war. Ellen Thomas reminds him, oh, yes, you did. A Portlander is tased to death. A Colorado man survives
what?
A Portland man is tasered to death.
Fantastic.
A Colorado man survives a tasing inside a Chuck E. Cheese. Get off my lawn, screams an Ohio man as he shoots a teenage trespasser to death.
I don't even want to hear the story now. I just want to go with the headline. That's fantastic.
We try.
All of that plus, I swear to God, I swear on the name of sweet Allah. I swear on the name of Muhammad, who, as we know, is a cartoon with a big bomb inside his turban, who fancied underage girls. I swear to you that we'll get to the top five today. Top five most influential metal albums of all time. We will do that today, if only so I can hear Tim Riley say, well, never mind. You'll have to wait. But we'll get to that later on. Also, Rick Emerson's Office Confidential returns today. So we'll do that later on. Ladies and gentlemen, from the City Desk, your personal savior, Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS Radio presents the City Desk Newsbeat, Tim Riley reporting. Before we get to our top story, Pamela Anderson has bought a condo and a $1 billion luxury high-rise in Las Vegas. She purchased a two-bedroom penthouse with more than 2,000 square feet and views of the strip facing north, south, east, and west. Similar units sell for more than $2 million. Others who have purchased these are Tobey Maguire and Leonardo DiCaprio.
You know, let me just say, first of all, A, I love Pam Anderson. B, I love Las Vegas. C, one of my goals, so she bought it. She's not just renting it.
No, she's not just renting it.
And so where is it at in Vegas? On the Strip?
It's on the Strip.
Oh, so great.
Facing north, south, east, and west.
Something cannot logically face north, south, east, and west.
Oh, it's called Panorama Towers.
Okay, come on, somebody make the joke. I guess they'll have to start calling it Panorama Towers. You're scary, Underwood. Here's the thing about Las Vegas, is that I long someday, with everything in me, with every fiber of my being, from the tips of my toes to the tops of my temples, I long to stay in one of those high roller suites in Vegas right now. Attention, anyone, anybody, anywhere who has any sort of pull, any sort of sway, who has, as they say on Homicide, any drag with anybody, because you watch every one of those movies. You watch Casino, you watch, Goodfellas, you watch the TV show Vegas, of course, and it's those high roller suites where the whales, as they call them, stay, where like the Larry Flints of the world stay. And I mean, that's what America is right there. One of those huge, just gaudily, unbelievably, sinfully, shamefully, embarrassingly lavish penthouse suites right at the top of one of those casinos, right at the top of the MGM Grand, right at the top of Caesars, something like that. It is all that is good and awful about this country. Not unlike Pam Anderson herself, by the way. And I would like to note that not unlike several other things that have come to this country, Pam Anderson is the most American woman you could possibly think of, especially when you consider the fact that she's not even from here. She, like our good pal Gene Simmons of Kiss, she is the ultimate American because she started by coming from somewhere else. I mean, Gene Simmons, as I've said over and over again, he is the definitive American because he was born in poverty in another country. He was a refugee, came here, moved to Hell's Kitchen, and then lived in Spanish Harlem, didn't speak the language, learned from the wonderful world of Disney, and now he's a levitating, blood-spitting, fire-breathing god of rock and roll thunder. And you got Pam Anderson, who comes here from Canada. She comes here as a small, not too terribly attractive, waifish brunette girl, and now she's,
Canada's kind of the 51st state.
As I've said before, Canada's just sort of a cover band for America. That's kind of what they are. She comes here, and now she's Pam Anderson. This is the land of reinvention. This is the land where anything is possible. There are no cats in America, and the streets are paved with cheese. And so the idea of Pam Anderson owning $1 billion penthouse in Vegas, it was like Pam Anderson dating Kid Rock. It just seemed inevitable. It just seemed like it was going to happen. There was nothing you could do about it. It was an unstoppable eventuality. So I have no point here except to say that I love Pam Anderson. I've said before that I don't find her terribly attractive as such because she's just so weird looking. She's just unbelievably fake looking. But it doesn't matter. She is Mrs. America, in my opinion. And so good on you, Pam.
Well,
I wish you the best of luck.
She intends to visit there 8 times a year.
Oh, that's fantastic. Has anybody seen a show at that Caesars, that rotunda or whatever they built, the Coliseum they built at Caesars?
No.
It's they built it for Celine Dion, and she's got the standing gig there. And then I guess Justin Timberlake is doing a thing there, too. And I think I think that's the same place where Manilow has the standing gig now.
No, he's at the Hilton.
Really?
Yeah, he's at the Hilton. Okay. Nobody ever talks about him anymore.
Yeah, I saw a gift shop.
Really?
Yeah, just entirely full of things with her face on them.
Oh,
like,
man.
Seashells.
Oh,
it's just fantastic. I mean, the thing about Vegas is, it was Nicholas Pileggi that referred to Vegas as being a morality car wash, where it doesn't matter what you do. What do you do? Well, I put screwdrivers in guys' ear for Murder Incorporated in Brooklyn. And, it doesn't matter. You go to Vegas, run a, you're a concierge. It doesn't matter. But Vegas also gives this glow of acceptability and greatness to things I would normally hate. For instance, I'm not a big fan of Elvis. I could give two rips about Elvis. But you know what? I carry this money clip with me, and it is an Elvis-O-Rama money clip from the Elvis-O-Rama Museum in Vegas. Because I went there my birthday some years ago with a friend of mine. He blew all his cash gambling. He blew all his money on blackjack. It was my birthday. He realized he bought me nothing. He only had $4 left. The only thing he could afford was a money clip that said Elvis at Elvis-A-Rama. I carry it. I cherish it. Because something from Vegas, it doesn't have to be good. Do you know what I mean? Things in Vegas, like a seashell with Celine Dion's face on it, doesn't matter. It's fantastic. Vegas makes all things wonderful. It is sort of this parallel universe where things you would normally hate become brilliant.
Well, not content to have Pamela Anderson stealing the headlines, Paris Hilton has reportedly dumped her Greek boyfriend, Stavros Nachos, because she's tired of listening to him speak in Greek.
I'm sorry, what was his name?
Stavros Nachos.
Okay. I thought she was dating a guy named Paris.
No, that was
before. Stavros Nachos is the guy that drove into the back of the truck with the jacket over his head
at the time of the
video. And then they let him drive away.
I have no idea what's going on.
He's like 19, and he also got in trouble in Vegas, actually, because she was bringing him to clubs where you had to be 21 and over.
This is what I get. I'm so out of the loop.
What's wrong?
Well, I'm filled with shame.
Rumor that she ran back to the arms of her other Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, when I was off the air, Sarah was holding it down for the Paris Hilton news. When the show was off the air, your blog really became Celebrity Gossip Central. And then Tim did sort of our skewed kind of news, and Clyde did the paranormal things, and Aaron did the geek stuff, and I just...
What did you do?
I did nothing.
I thought so.
I sat around and I let you guys carry the slack while I tried to get a job. That's all. I let you guys pick up all the dead weight.
But you did all the legwork. We must credit you for that.
Nobody
wants to talk to us.
I am terribly behind on all of my Paris Hilton news. So she's no longer with a guy named Paris
Nachos.
She's with a guy named Nachos.
She's no longer with the Nachos.
I'm sorry. She may have dumped the Nachos.
She's back in Paris with Paris. Paris is back with Paris, but not Mr. Nachos.
My brain hurts. Let's move on.
All right. Well, let's get to the real news, shall we? The president says he does not believe Iraq has descended into civil war, and urges the nation's leaders to confront sectarian violence. Mr. Bush said the Iraqis had a chance to fall apart, and they didn't.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Bush said the Iraqis had a chance to fall apart, and they didn't.
This is Iraq planet Earth he's talking about?
Yeah, at this morning's press conference.
Okay.
So he said that.
Whatever you say.
In the meantime, they blew up another police station today. We're going to the sound here. And this is going to be Iraq 01. The vast majority of Iraqi police are trying to do good for their community and their country, says Nick Robertson.
The way insurgents work here is that they perhaps not directly recruit a police officer or put a police officer in the army, but by strong-arm tactics on a family or a relative of that policeman, they can influence a policeman's actions.
If they steal an apple off an apple cart, a policeman's going to go after them. If they don't, they don't bother with anyone.
What? That explains nothing.
I
have no idea.
They're concentrating mostly on community policing instead of just shooting people for no reason.
Well, what does that do with apples? I don't understand what we're talking about.
Well, let's move along here and talk about Helen Thomas, who in January grumbled at the president, was a coward for not calling her, for a question during a press conference. He's been ignoring Helen Thomas lately.
Which you don't do.
The grand dame of news people.
You know, and Helen Thomas is great, man. She's on Real Time with Bill Maher a lot, and and he engages in this sort of disturbing and off-putting flirting with her, which is not something anybody really needs. You know, nobody needs to see you flirting with Helen Thomas. We've talked about that pantyhose dried apple art.
Mm-hmm.
Helen Thomas, another person. You know what Helen Thomas looks like? She looks like that... She looks like What's Her Guts from Poltergeist. Your daughter is strongly psychic, as I suspect are you. She looks totally like...
Or a basket full of California raisins.
Or E.T. Like E.T. in a burka. But you're not supposed to ignore her. You're supposed to call on her first because she's been there for like 200 years.
Yeah.
And it's this unheard-of breach of protocol that Bush doesn't call on her.
Right. Yeah. Meanwhile, Dick Cheney's on the PR trail again. He visits a military base where he can find fans like Bob Hope, if he was still alive. And he says the war on terror can only be won with their help, like it's winnable.
This nation could not have started, supported, or sustained our major operations in the global war on terror. That war goes on. And thanks in part to all of you, it's a war that we are going to win.
We'll cheer for anything.
This nation could not.
All right.
Well, let's look for new people. Iraq is known as eating al-Qaeda terrorists.
I'm sorry, who is?
Iraq. I'm sorry, Iran.
Okay,
Iran.
I was going to say, you almost made sense there for a second.
I know. Iran is known for eating al-Qaeda terrorists, so let's go kill them next.
We have longstanding concerns about Iran providing shelter to terrorists on its territory. Iran is the world's most significant state sponsor of terror, and this includes shielding al-Qaeda terrorists on its territory.
Yeah, we know that as a fact.
You know what this is like? This is like when you're five and your parents get some low-budget magician for your birthday party, and he's not really skilled, like he's not even up to Joe Bluth level, like he didn't really know what he's doing. And so he's like, as you can see, you know, pick a card, and you pick, like, the Three of Hearts. And then he says, like, you know, did you pick the Nine of Diamonds? And you say no, and he goes, yes, you did. And you, no, I did. Yes, you did. And he's doing, like, the worst sleight of hand you've ever seen. Or, like, that guy who runs the really terrible three-card Monte games on the streets of Brooklyn, who's completely without skill at it. That's what these guys are like. They're not even trying to be subtle about it. It's, you know, it's just sort of like Iraq is aiding al-Qaeda. Iraq is aiding al-Qaeda. Iran is aiding al-Qaeda. You just said Iraq. No, I didn't. I've been saying Iran all along. No, you were saying Iraq just a second ago. No, I wasn't. And that's it. And it works.
Yep. Once again, Iran is known to be aiding al-Qaeda terrorists.
There are those who were involved in the 1998 bombings of our embassies in East Africa who are in Iran. So we've urged them to not only turn over information about those individuals, but turn those individuals over to us so that they can face justice.
Who would know if something belonging to us was bombed in Africa? And what would it look like? It would be even better than anything they have standing there, wouldn't it? A pile of bricks would be anything
be
better.
An improvement. Onward and upward. All right. Excellent. Good times.
Now, let's see here.
Should we, sir, do we need to be breaking?
Oh, probably.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's.
We're going to go to New Orleans in just a couple of minutes here.
Lucky us. All right.
They're prepared this time.
What is. Never mind. All right. We'll be back. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up, CNN radio correspondent Gary Baumgarten. Later on, Jim Roop's going to be here in the top five. Don't go anywhere. The Rick Emerson Show. When I need the prosecution. Show at 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Later on, talk to our good friend Jim Roop about or something about this disgrace, and then they seized some guy's crap and they're auctioning it off in public, and he's a politician. It's a guy that we can laugh at and make the object of our sport and mockery. That's all I care about.
Makes us all feel a little bit better.
It really does. He's a bar by which we can judge ourselves and not find our own personality traits wanting. Also, top five most influential metal albums. And then, now, Sarah, do you remember this guy, William Carlton, that we had on about the video game, the Missile Command record?
Yeah. A while ago.
Are you lying?
Kind of.
It was on his website.
Yeah, I remember a video game guy. I don't remember what game, though.
Do you even listen?
What?
Thank you. Bada bing. When you hear the show that turned the video games, do you just sort of hear like a... Is that it? Does it just become a gibberish in your ears?
That's when I go on MySpace. I'm like, oh, video games. I tune out for a second.
Like, you just go to your private little space inside. You go to your private happy zone.
No, the actual internet.
Oh, the actual MySpace.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Well, there's this guy, William Carlton. We had him on like four different times on this radio show, which you produce and have produced for a long time.
Huh?
Thank you. Zing!
You need that Z back.
I really
don't you have
do.
It?
No, I don't. I have. You know what I do have though is I got Aaron, the geek in the city. He has a new personal sound effect.
Okay.
Now I can't use it though. I can't use it until he emails me. Like I don't want to bust it out. It's like the bat signal. You can't. So as soon as Aaron gives us a reason, we will use Aaron's new sounder. But I don't have a Z. My point is that William Carlton was on several times. He was trying to set a world record for Missile Command, and the actual attempt happened, I think, while we were off the air. So I was talking to him this morning, and we will try to get him on today. It just depends on, I want to give him adequate time.
Was it the guy who's going to play it, like, for the longest amount of time?
Yeah, he was going to sell, like, a 9 billion points. Or,
I do remember,
You're bluffing.
No,
you can
I
say
do
that.
Remember.
Was he the guy who was going to break that record by doing the thing for a long time?
No, wasn't he going to stay up for, like, days and keep playing it? And
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Anyway, so we may or may not be talking to him later today. I want to make sure to give him adequate room. That's the story you got to get down and roll around in, like a dog on a freshly cut lawn. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to New York City.
I love New York City. Oh, yeah. New York City. I love New York City. Oh, yeah. New York City.
Ladies and gentlemen, from New York City, Gary Baumgarten joining us now from CNN Radio. How are you, sir?
I am pretty good. How are you, Rick?
You're pretty good.
Pretty good.
On a scale, on a classic 1 to 10 scale, where would you put yourself today?
I'd say about an 8.5.
Well, that's more than pretty good, my friend.
I was about a 7.5 before I called you, but I enjoy doing your show so much. Knock it up another notch, you
know? Things could be worse. You could have leprosy. Your skin could be falling off in sheets.
That's right.
I just like to use the phrase falling off in sheets whenever possible. I saw this story that came down today, and I had to read this several times because I thought that maybe I was missing something, but fill a brother in here. So there's this guy, and he joins the military, even though he is a Buddhist, and as such precluded from fighting or engaging in combat.
Yes.
And then he is surprised and horrified when they want him as a member of the military to engage in combat, and so now he is suing. Is this, if I got this right?
Well, he's at Fort Drum, New York, but his unit has been ordered deployed to Afghanistan,
right.
And he's applied for conscientious objector status.
Right.
And so he went to court to say, hey, they shouldn't send me to Afghanistan pending the processing of my application. And the federal judge agreed that until the application is fully processed, the military cannot send him to Afghanistan. It's a three-point review. The first phase he has completed. And the recommendation from the officer who investigated was that he be given a conscientious objector status. But in the meantime, the application is pending and his unit is shipping out and he doesn't want to go with his unit.
Well, I mean, the last person to be saying we ought to be sending more people over to the Middle East, but it does seem like that's one of those things. Like if you want to avoid being involved in any military conflict, perhaps you shouldn't join the military.
Yeah, you know, and it's a little bit different than the Vietnam War because we had the draft. So people
right.
were conscripted, and then they declared conscientious objector status. That's different. They were
right.
forced in. But here, as you point out, he volunteered to join the military and then decided over Christmas time that he was a CO and didn't want to go.
That's handy. Now, let me ask you this. So if you join the military, and then the military says, hey, it's time to pony up your service, and they try to send you to... If you just, at that point, said, no, I've suddenly had this change of heart, and I'm a conscientious objector, and I cannot engage in any kind of... Does the military, do they take back all the stuff they've given you?
No, they don't take back, but what they do is, if they agree and grant you conscientious objector status, then they would discharge you from the military. So, I don't know. I would think that what they could do in the case of a person such as this is find, you know, put him in a non-combat unit and have him serve out his
right.
time, potentially. I guess that would be something they could do.
I
agree with you. It seems kind of odd that somebody who would be a conscientious objector would join the military. And as you point out, he is a Buddhist, and that would make him, on ethical grounds or religious grounds, however you view it, a pacifist.
And this is sort of tangentially related to what we're talking about here, but I mean, I was talking to somebody about this off the air earlier today, and is the military going to become, is it going to get a lot harder to get out of the military and things like this? And I don't want to phrase it by saying, are we running out of troops? Because that's not the right way to put it, but I mean, you hear this phrase that the military is being stretched, quote, dangerously thin, and is that actually true, or is that just a thing that gets mouthed a lot in sound bites, in your estimation?
I don't know. I'm not a military strategist, but I can tell you that, you know, I mean, it's common sense that if you open up too many fronts, that it's going to cause a problem. On the other hand, this is the most technologically advanced and well-trained army or military known to mankind, and I don't think that's just hype coming from the administration.
Right.
I think that's absolutely true. And a tremendous fighting force. And, you know, I've actually, I'm a little bit of a student of this. So, again, not at all an expert, but if you look at some of the technology, that's the part of it that I really enjoy is the technological advances. You know, this whole idea, you know, how the Army, they had that PR campaign, an army of one.
Right.
And pretty soon you're going to have like a RoboCop soldier out there that really is an army of one, you know, fully self-contained and, you know, ready to rock and roll. And so maybe you don't need as many individuals on the ground once the technology gets to the point where you can fight the war almost like a video game and, you know, you stay as far away from the actual battlefield as possible with your human assets.
It seems like we should be getting the Japanese to work on this. They're a crafty people. They created that Aibo dog or whatever, and then they have that other robot that I saw. I was reading on the Drudge Report. They have this robot that's going to take care of the elderly and infirm. It's like android that they're going to put in like Alzheimer's homes, and grandma forgets where the toilet is, it'll guide her in the right direction. It seems like we should be allying with the Japanese and just send, because that, first of all, you want to talk about the element of surprise. That'd freak some people out in Afghanistan. You know, some guys who are getting uppity with us and deciding that they want to cause trouble. You send an army of just silver-skinned cyber warriors in there. I mean, it would be hard to get more surprising than it is. An army of killer robots advancing on the enemy.
Yeah, and if you did that, then at least, yes, there's going to be death and destruction, but it's not your people that are bleeding.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just seems like we ought to just be rolling out the T-800s at this point. So I'd feel better about my tax dollars going over there at that point, you know? So, Gary Bump? Yes?
Yes.
And we're doing that.
I agree.
Just an endless one-syllable exchange. Gary Baumgarten, New York City. Thank you, sir.
Okay, buddy. See you later.
There you go. There's Gary Baumgarten, CNN radio correspondent, live in New York City. It seems like we ought to be at that point already. Like, I know that Sony quit making that Aibo dog thing. They stopped manufacturing it. And so now everybody, all those people who have the Aibo dog are, they're all developing this premature trauma because their Aibo dogs are going to quit working and you'll have to kick into the curb. But it seems like at this point, there really is no reason that we can't just have an army of gigantic skeletal mechanical warriors over there advancing on the Taliban. That'd scare the hell out of some people. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Well, New Orleans is better prepared for an upcoming hurricane season because of stronger flood walls and better evacuation plans after Hurricane Katrina, says Mayor Ray Nagin. We ought to be able to sustain another Katrina, so bring it on.
Bring it on.
If another Category 5 hits it, probably the city will be gone, but the levees will still be standing.
Wait, he thanked
the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for doing this.
I want to take all these inanities just in the order you presented them to me. First of all, there is some obvious joke there somewhere that what's his name?
Ray Nagin.
Doesn't it sound a lot like reneging? Reneging? You know,
he's up for election.
Making a bunch of... Yeah, but he's going to get swept out, right?
He's the only guy among all these troublemakers who didn't admit to any wrongdoing. No, and everyone has to admit to a little bit of it.
Yeah, because, certainly there were things that the government could have done better, but I mean, it's...
So, the good part about this is, if they get another Katrina, the city will be gone, but the levees will still be standing this time.
That's fantastic. For future generations to study, or something like that. Here's what you should never do, though, when you're engaged in some sort of a news cycle in which the subject at hand is an act of God. Mm-hmm. One should never refer to an act of God with the phrase, bring it on. Because the Almighty doesn't like to be taunted. And he's a smiteful God. And I think there is a strong possibility that God hates you. No matter who you are, doesn't matter who you are, if you're in the sound of my voice, I mean, the odds are like 2 in 3 that God hates you. And so you've probably done something to irritate him. And so if you start ending your sentences with, bring it on, that's going to work out badly.
This report issued by the Mayor's Commission says anyone can rebuild in New Orleans. Well, you are at your own risk.
Is this cut 01?
That's cut 01, yes.
All right.
Susan Rosemary.
What goes unsaid here is the belief that the city simply can't continue to afford to supply city services to all of the geographic area, pre-Katrina, city police protection, fire
that's
protection.
All that's left is white
sewer service. These are services that a much smaller city with a much smaller tax base may not be able to afford in the future.
A much smaller tax base? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, all the areas that got destroyed were the low-income areas anyway, right?
That's correct. Yes.
So it's not like they were making a lot of income tax, in the pawn shop district. Let's be honest there. So I mean, If all that was washed away were the poor areas, I mean both white and black, and if all that was left was the rich areas, seems like you got nothing but tax base left. It seems like if you are like one of the one-tenth of the population there who didn't lose all your crap, it seems like you ought to be okay with paying a little bit more, to get things up and rolling again.
Well, let's see if Katrina's coming back, shall we? Severe weather across the southern U.S. could be a lot worse.
We didn't really have much in the way of tornado reports, so those tornadoes are usually responsible for the most intense damage. And especially this time of year, Mississippi, Alabama, this is sort of their prime season for tornadoes.
Does CNN just have some policy that they only stock weather reports for, like, people that aren't us? They try to avoid our region. Yesterday it was Dakota, and today it's tornadoes in the south.
It's only for people who don't listen. Or heed warnings.
Fantastic. All right, there you go.
Okay, here we have two, not one, but two tasing stories in a row.
Fantastic. I wish I had a tasing sound.
Mm-hmm. First, a Portland man died yesterday after police used a stun gun to subdue him during a struggle. Police say the 46-year-old man was running and yelling in traffic and becoming combative when they tried to take him into custody. They used a taser to subdue and handcuff him. The man was conscious and alert immediately after the shock, but later collapsed. Authorities say he died on the way to the hospital. An investigation is underway at an autopsy plan.
And we got this, our good friend Kristen in accounting, who reappears here in the email box. She says, that happened right outside the studios where she works. Actually, in the K2 studios.
How would you know that place has no windows?
She's in a gulag. She's in a habit trail. A man was running. Well, they are a news gathering operation, theoretically. Mm-hmm. So, a man was running around. If they haven't fired those people by now, a man was running around in traffic and then was tased by the man. I almost couldn't get to my apartment. Oh, I shouldn't. My apartment, which is right around the corner. Sorry about that. Maybe that part wasn't for air. Well, try not to stalk her too much on your way home. So they tased a guy. What did he die of? And don't say he died of being tased. I mean, is it like his heart just stopped, or do we know?
We don't know yet.
Yeah, right.
An investigation is underway.
Yeah.
How old was he? Was he old? Was he infirm in some way?
We don't know. There's a picture of a man standing here with a flashlight. So he must be investigating.
Okay. Yes.
They're looking for clues.
Well, because, we have a long-standing fascination with tasing on this show. And way back in the Entercom days, we were going to tase Kyle. If you all remember, we had Kyle the intern, and we were going to pay him. He was going to do it. And he was going to do it, too, for $50. We were going to tase. Hold on. I'm sorry, my phone's ringing. I wonder who this is. I'm not going to answer that. If you're calling me right now, it doesn't matter.
That's the management.
I'm not.
Please don't talk about K2 firing people.
What was I saying? But we were going to pay tase Kyle. We were going to pay him $50 to tase him. Because as we discovered, we learned that there are two different kinds of tasers. There's the kind that you actually have to reach over and touch their skin. It's like a hand stamp at a club, except it stamps you with 50,000 volts. And then there's the other kind where it shoots the little darts out at you, which I think is the kind they used on Rodney King.
That's the kind that make people scream.
Says Tim in a sort of disturbing display of knowledge. That's the kind that they're always using in Florida. Whenever I see them tasing some fat-ass soccer mom who won't get out of her SUV. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And there was that. Did you see that story that happened while we were off the air? It happened over the winter. Some fat, stupid windbag of a mom in an SUV. And I believe it was in Florida. It's fascinating. The cop pulls her over. The cop comes up. And sometimes the man is just screwing with you. Sometimes he has a real reason to pull you over. I don't know. I think he pulled her over for, her seatbelt on, or she was weaving or something. Anyway, he pulls her over. She's talking on her cell phone. I used to have the audio. I'll see if I can find it. She won't get off her cell phone. The cop walks up to the car. And look, it doesn't matter whether you think the cop's right to tell you to get off the cell phone or not. When a guy with a gun and pepper spray and a club and a badge and a taser is talking to you, you just simple preservation of self kicks in and you do what he says. So he comes up and the cop says, ma'am, can you hang up your cell phone? And she does this. You can't, but she puts the hand up in the universal, I'll be with you in a second. And the cop's like, ma'am, I need you to hang up the phone. And she just sort of nods and puts her hand up and continues with her conversation. And the cop says, ma'am, I'm going to ask you to hang up that phone right now or I'm going to have to use force. And in the background, she's still got her hand up. She's ignoring the cop. And you hear her on the phone go, yeah, it's a cop. He's asking me to hang up. So anyway, I'm just going to... And she just continues on. The next thing you see is the cop goes for the taser. And you just hear these unholy shrieks of animal-like pain. And it's
like a bunch of monkeys chasing themselves around the cake. It's on the Best of Web Junk on VH1. It was just on, like last week.
Like a bunch of monkeys chasing themselves into a rotary fan is what it was like. It was a whole lot of, and it was so satisfying. Look, because we've all known that woman.
And rewound it.
I watched it over and over, just wallowing in and relishing every scream of childlike pain that came out of her mouth. We have all known that woman that just would not shut her damn pie hole and get off the cell phone. And, cop brutality, cop shrubbly. It was so fantastic just to see him tase her right in the face. It's the best thing I've ever seen. It satisfied a little part inside me that I didn't even know was there. You know what I mean? It satiated a little craving that I didn't even know existed. And I'm with you. I watched it like 40 times in a row. What else are you going to do? I sat there for the better part of a day. And every time I felt down, every time I felt bad about my life, every time I didn't know where things were going, every time that frown needed to be turned upside down, I just watched him tasing her in the face with 50,000 volts, and it made a song in my heart and a little dance within my soul for the next half hour or so. It was fantastic.
It was as good as the half man, half monkey in that laboratory. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's genius. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind that they use in Florida with a little metal dart shootout. So we were going to tase Kyle for $50. And then Jason from The Fan came on, and he was talking about, it's a pretty great story, actually. The story was intended to persuade Kyle to do it, but it had the opposite effect. It sort of made Kyle afraid. Because Jason was talking about tasing a guy, of course, in a frat house after drinking, which is where all these things happen. And tasing the guy until he soiled himself, which is fantastic. I mean, the guy was drunk, and they're tasing him, and they catch, and then they just kept on tasing him, and they just, and like the stop signal was when the guy just the guy just let it all go right there in his pants, and which I know that I shouldn't find such things funny, but God damn it, that's amusing. I don't care who you are. So we were never able to tase Kyle.
Maybe if we spread newspapers on the floor.
If you are recently unemployed or perhaps homeless and would like to earn a few quick dollars, I can probably find a taser. There's cops in the audience. I know they listen. So you just let me know. All right. So we have another tasing story.
We do.
Excellent.
Unfortunately, it's not at the teller. Aurora Police Department's review board has ruled on an incident involving a police officer using his taser at an Aurora Chuck E. Cheese. They said the officer acted within police policy when he used a stun gun to subdue a suspect who allegedly was stealing from the salad bar. Police were called to the Chuck E. Cheese when the manager reported a larceny in progress, telling officers that a customer had refused to show proof that he paid for food and was loading his plate with salad. Officers confronted the subject, who was at the restaurant with his children, ages 3 and 7. Patrons said the popular pizza parlor was packed with children and families at the time. According to police, Gale was asked to step outside, this is the suspect's name, to discuss the accusations, when he refused to cooperate, and the struggle ensued, in which he shoved one of the police officers. The argument escalated until Gale was shoved onto the lap of a woman who was sitting two booths away holding a baby. That's when police pulled out a taser gun and tried to subdue him.
Now if you take... First of all, I've been to Chuck E. Cheese, you know. I don't know how much that iceberg lettuce could possibly cost you, but...
Who would eat the food at Chuck E. Cheese?
No. Don't front on Chuck E. Cheese. Now, Chuck E. Cheese has fantastic pizza. I will tell you, not fantastic. It's very good. I will say that the Chuck E. Cheese has fine pizza.
All right. And I read it. So.
No, I haven't. You're not. See, but you're vegan, so it's like you. I mean, the pizza, by definition, the only pizza you can have is the kind that has fake cheese on it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing you can really eat in terms of pizza. So you'll have to take my word for this. It's been a few years. But I went to a Chuck E. Cheese, like 4 years ago or something. We had some friend of ours. It was some kid was having a birthday party or something there. It's not bad. And it's cheap, too. So for what you're paying for pizza, Chuck E. Cheese is not all that bad. My question is that I need to know all these things for my tasing, my future tasing activities. If you tase somebody while they're sitting, like if you were sitting in Sarah's lap.
I beg your pardon.
And Sarah was holding
I'm an honorable newsman.
And Sarah was holding a baby.
Oh, that'll never happen.
If Sarah was breastfeeding, no. If Sarah was breastfeeding a baby,
what is wrong with you?
Just because I know it unnerves you.
Oh.
If Tim was sitting in Sarah's lap and Sarah
while
was
while I'm breastfeeding Sarah a baby,
was breastfeeding
what imagery is this?
Sarah was breastfeeding a baby.
How would that be happening?
In my head, I can see it without any trouble at all, actually. And I tased the baby. Then the question is, would Tim feel it? Somebody who knows the answer. Bill,
sometimes I wish you'd stop talking.
Bill, the science guy. See, you say
why would
that,
the baby be tased?
Why did you pick the baby out of the snare?
Because I don't like babies. Babies should be tased. I'm saying it right now. That's one of the that's on the Rick Emerson Show mission statement, to tase babies. And don't say things like you wish I would stop talking, because that's when you're going to wake up and this is going to be a Spanish station, all right?
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're going to wake up tomorrow and it's going to be Radio Disney.
You cannot make references to me breastfeeding. You know that grosses me out.
Okay, but I'm saying...
That's just mean.
If the baby was breastfeeding and I tased it, would Tim sitting on your lap feel it? If someone knows the answer to this theoretical science question...
Oh, does it go through the baby?
What, like skin to skin?
It's it. How much resistance could a baby put up? I mean, it's like it only has to go a short distance.
So the baby would shock
baby.
Me, and then you'd want...
Well, you didn't give the baby a warning.
The baby refused to comply. Let's go to the... Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hey, it's Adrian. How you doing, man?
Hi. This is it. Now, Adrian, now, can I reveal that you are a cop?
Yeah, reservist with Milwaukee.
All right, so you are the man. Now,
yeah.
Now my question is, if Sarah was breastfeeding a baby...
God, I hate you.
Yes.
And Tim was sitting on Sarah's lap, and they were both wearing Speedos.
Is this happening at Chuck E. Cheese?
I'm wearing a Speedo, Rick?
Yes.
And what is wrong with you?
And the baby displeased me in some fashion.
I'm so glad that you don't live in my jurisdiction.
Yes. Yes, so am I. If the baby then displeased me in some fashion, and the baby, after several warnings, continued to displease me, and I tased it repeatedly, would Tim feel it?
Tim wouldn't feel anything unless I shot one of the darts into him. When you discharge a taser, there's two metal probes that come out. They're like little fish hooks.
Right.
And, you know, they just go into the body far enough to create an electrical circuit. Now, if I managed to get one of the barbs into the baby and one into to Tim, then it would zap.
Is that possible, or does that require, like, extra marksmanship to tase Tim and the baby simultaneously?
You know, it would be possible, but it'd be real tricky.
What if it was a fat baby? I mean, if it was, like, a big baby, so both of them went right into the baby.
Then Tim would be fine.
Excellent. Okay, but what about Sarah? If she's breastfeeding a baby and I tase it, what happens to Sarah?
I don't think that she's gonna feel anything. Because even, like, if you're, let's say another officer is wrestling with a suspect in the water, and I have to tase that suspect,
yeah.
The other officer isn't gonna feel it.
I wonder if that, I think that's because that has to do with the amps, not the volts. I think that the low amperage.
Exactly. It's a real low amps, real high, actually it's real high watts.
Screw you guys, I went to school. Yeah. All right. Excellent. So what the taser you use, how many watts is that?
It's about 50,000 watts.
50,000, that's fantastic.
Non-directional?
Yes. Yeah, that's the nighttime. All right. So excellent. Have you ever had to tase somebody?
I haven't gotten to tase anybody yet. So
listen to that. Listen to the cop
Not
lexicon.
That he hasn't.
Have you tased somebody and then the response is I haven't gotten to tase anybody?
Well,
yet.
There's no Chuck E. Cheese in Milwaukee, is there?
Well, you know, I kind of took my hit with it, so you know, I want to keep the joy rolling.
Now, is that true? Is like when you sign up? I always thought that was an urban legend when you sign up to become a cop that they made you take a hit.
You know, it's not required, but it's sort of a good idea just so that you can explain to somebody that you know what the level of force.
It's a rite of passage.
That this is going to hurt a lot.
Exactly. And, you know, actually, after being tasered, I would be more likely to use it just because it hurts. It hurts real bad when you're getting hit with it. But as soon as you shut it off,
yeah.
You're fine. It's like, you know, 1 second you can't think. You know, all you can think is like the F word, you know, as loud as you've ever thought inside of your head.
Would you say that being tased, would you say it's the most painful thing you've ever experienced?
Far and away the most painful thing. But the pain stops as soon as the taser shuts off.
Okay. Have you been pepper sprayed?
Been pepper sprayed. Being pepper sprayed sucks because, you know, you're in pain for 45 minutes and then you're uncomfortable for a couple hours after that.
Yeah.
And it's not as effective. Tasers are great just because it allows you to incapacitate somebody without really hurting them.
Yeah.
You know, once it's off, then you got them in cuffs and, you know, they don't get banged up, you don't get banged up, and it's all about saving lives, really.
Yeah, it's all about serving and protecting.
It's like sticking your fingers in a light socket. Once you pull your fingers out, you're fine.
Yes. All right. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. We appreciate it. And I, you should know, for the record, I obey all posted speed limits and traffic regulations.
As you should.
Thank you.
Take care, Rick.
All right, there you go. Be safe. All right, there you go. That's Adrian. He's Adrian, who
I guess he's a good person to know if you go to Milwaukee.
Speaks for the man. I don't know to what extent I can talk about that guy, but he's a cop. I guess I can say this. I don't think I'm giving away any secrets. So, as Adrian, you just heard, he's a part-time police officer. Mm-hmm. So he's, I hope I can say this. We've talked about him before. He's hugely muscular. He's like all ripped out. He's been to a couple listener parties, and it's him and his, and I mean this as a compliment, his like pneumatic blonde girlfriend. I mean, it's like they're really like the most fit couple. They're like the cover of Muscle and Fitness magazine.
Yeah.
He's got a flat top, and again, he looks like he could punch through concrete. And his girlfriend, very beautiful, very feminine, but also again, it's like the Terminator 3 thing where you get the feeling she could put her fist right through your spine. So he's like this hugely muscular guy, is a cop part of the time, rest of the time, sells diamonds. So really, what I'm saying is no one on earth gets laid more than Adrian. I'm sure now, I mean, it's you know, he's in a wonderful committed relationship. But
you're a cop in the diamond business.
Yes, I'm just here at Adrian's House of Jewelry, and we sell you diamonds, and then we haze you while you're... should I take this call?
Sure.
All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hey, Rick. Chris and Camus Washington here. Why you have Sarah Dillon in a Speedo breastfeeding? I'm wondering if the taser would cause her to release some stringy milk.
Oh. Why do you got to use the phrase stringy milk?
During the one show.
That is honestly one of my favorite terms you ever brought up that used to cause her to play that.
I don't even remember what context the phrase stringy milk. And
what was that even
from? And we're in the lunch hour. Good times.
Dude, I do not know, but you said she used to pull out the Oak Ridge Boys just to get even with you.
Yeah, you'd play that Elvira song to get back. But where did the phrase stringy milk even come from? I don't know.
I don't know, but I used to laugh terribly while you were saying it. But listen to this. I wanted to tell you that I was your first listener ever in the city of Portland.
Uh-huh.
Tuned into the show one day to hear that god-awful Dr. Tony Grant in a interview.
Yeah.
And you used to tell everybody to tell two people.
Yeah.
Two people who told two people, and now look how big you are.
That's what I'm saying. It's all about the power of the people. And I don't say that as just some sort of a line or some sort of a gimmick or a shtick or whatever. It's totally the two telling two telling two. It is exponential growth. And now it reached, such vast proportions that they were able to put the show back on the air after Entercom tried to get rid of it. So there you
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely. You probably don't remember this, but I actually delivered a package to your building and made a call from downstairs. I got a tour of the studio, met Bob McNabb and Rock Chick Katie.
Bob McNabb and Rock Chick Katie.
Call me a name dropper.
Yeah, dude, no, you're old school. We always love to hear from the old school people. Excellent.
Right,
Chris, thank you so much. Call us anytime.
Good day.
All right, there you go. Bob McNabb of the Clan McNabb. Yeah, where's Bob McNabb these days?
He is retired. I used to live with Bob McNabb.
I love Bob. Bob was great. Bob and Katie, she's doing radio in L.A. now. She's doing Westwood One, I think.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
All right. Did we get anything done this hour?
Well, we had some enlightening discussions on many topics.
Stringy Milk.
Speedos, I am finding that Elvira song.
I'm from a band called Stringy Milk.
Oh, that's so wrong.
Excellent. All right. Hey, I'll tell you what. Back after this. Don't go anywhere. Coming up later. Why are you clutching your bosom? Coming back on the other side, we'll have Office Confidential. Jim Roop from CNN Radio later on. Top 5 most influential metal albums of all time. We'll try to get this Missile Command record updated, too. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.